Introducing the newly transformed Sheraton San Diego Resort, the perfect place to soak in stunning waterfront views. With all new guest rooms, including suites with private balconies, a new pool and cabanas, plus jet skiing and paddleboarding, you may never leave. Hungry? Savor Cali Baja dining. Thirsty? Grab a beer at Brewery X. Head to Marriott.com to book your stay at the Sheraton. Book now and enjoy breakfast on us each night you stay. Sheraton of San Diego Resort. New look, same heart of the harbor.
Urgent announcement, America. It's time to rise up and reclaim our values. Welcome to Biblical Citizenship Alive, brought to you by Save America Now PAC. This is your platform for truth and action. Join Steve and our guests as we confront the critical issues facing our nation today. We stand together for a pro-American, pro-family future rooted in our foundational truths. From defending our liberties to preserving our cultural heritage, we're here to ignite insightful discussions and passionate advocacy. Don't miss a moment of this crucial dialogue as we work to reclaim our cultural integrity and shape a brighter tomorrow. Tune in and be a part of the movement. It's your journey to informed citizenship and action. And now, let's dive in and make a difference together. Here's your host, Steve Austin.
Good afternoon, everybody. Kelly, how are you doing today?
I am good. Crazy busy as usual, but life goes on.
So today is just when you thought elections are over, they're not. As you know, here in San Diego County, there was a major election yesterday for the District 1 county supervisor. And what's interesting about this race, it's a very important race for the county of San Diego, which represents 3.4 million people, eighth largest city in the United States, is our county supervisors control almost a $10 billion budget. So they're quite, they have carry a lot of weight. And right now, it's a five-person board, but the chairperson decided to bail out for kind of unknown reasons, I guess, but after she got elected in November. So there's an open seat. And that's in District 1. District 1 is the southern part of the county and includes Imperial Beach and Chula Vista. Right now, the split on the supervisors board is 2-2. Jim Desmond, Joel Anderson represented the more Republican conservative side. And then there's a couple of women who are more on the liberal side of life. So this particular election is really critical to San Diego and San Diego's future because, if we can end up having a conservative majority in the county, then Kelly, we have a chance at making some changes throughout the county. Absolutely. And certainly having the kinds of votes that we need. Now, there was a special election that was on April 8th. As of now, John McCann, who is the mayor of Chula Vista, and let me just mention, Chula Vista is becoming a pretty amazing city in many respects. Mm-hmm. They've dealt with the homeless issue. They've dealt with a lot of the crime issues. But most importantly, they are opening a phenomenal hotel next month that has thousands of rooms, and that particular hotel, the Gaylord, there, I think there's only maybe 5 or 10 of them in the whole country. I've stayed at one in Nashville, but it is a major waterfront addition. And I was talking recently to somebody at a competing hotel, and they said, I asked, where are some of your assistants? So they've all gotten signed up at the Gaylord. They had waiting lines when they opened the place up for job opportunities, hiring thousands of people. It's just a massive place. In fact, the one I stayed at several years ago in Nashville, I can still remember, I was there for an AICPA employee benefits conference, which, probably had 1,000 participants. But we were only one little group out of 10 groups in this hotel. And I learned pretty quickly that you want to make sure you get your room reservation reasonably close to where the conference is happening, or you're going to spend half your day walking around. Anyhow, it's that kind of place. It will have it'll be by far the largest lodging and conference facility in San Diego County. And it opens in about a month. So John McCann, mayor of Chula Vista, has been part of the process of getting that there. Of course, those things don't happen overnight. They take years of planning. But John's a solid citizen, conservative guy. I tried to get him on the radio for this today, but of course, this is the day after the election, and
he might be a little busy. Yeah,
but we will get him in the future in a couple of weeks, because what's going to happen is you have to have 50% plus one vote to win, and there's about six candidates. So Aguirre she has about 34% of the vote, and or 32%. He has 44% of the vote, so he's got a lead. But, of course, that means that 56% of the vote right now voted, when you look at the group, voted in another direction. So
right.
The key
is... what's the percentage left for the runoff?
In terms of votes?
Yeah.
I think last time I heard, they had 11,000 votes to count, but they counted about 60,000. So, I suspect by certainly the weekend, it'll be completely... But... Then they're going into a runoff, and that's July 1st. So we're going to want to get him on the air here in a couple of weeks. He'll be heavily trying to – he basically has to convince six more out of the – there's 375,000 registered voters. I think the turnout – guess what the turnout was, Kelly?
What? How many?
15%.
Oh, wow.
They had about
60%. Get out and vote.
Yeah.
So important. I think that a lot of people don't really pay attention to things like this, or they think it's not a big deal, but this is a huge deal for our county. And, we have Jim Desmond, who's going to be up for, he's going to be done his term. He's termed out. And so we do have to win that race as well next year. So this is really important that John gets in and that we have that majority on the seat.
Well, it will have been a long time, prior to this. Of course, we had the Nathan Fletcher debacle, has chewed up all kinds of time and effort. But now we have an opportunity. When you think about, let's assume out of the 375, 20% of the folks show up for the second round. That's about 75,000 people. Well, he has convinced, obviously, all the folks that voted for him vote again, and then another 6%, which... it's about 5,000 people. So, but those are going to be a tough 5,000. There's going to be a lot of folks that are going to try and vote against him. So now we want to get John on the air, and that's kind of a big deal. The other thing that's a big deal, of course, is the Trump tariffs. My goodness. And the market took a big nosedive, and today it pretty much recovered to where it was before the tariffs were announced.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to do, of course, is have a long-term view of what is Trump trying to accomplish here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the tariffs.
Yeah, and you can see a lot of people on the left who are attacking him. They don't have that outlook, and it's frustrating because it is going to hurt for a little bit, but it is something that we need to do, and we've been needing to do this for over 40 years, and hopefully people can get on board and see the benefit of it in the future.
Well, the one I like is today he increased the tariff on China to, 120%. Mm-hmm. It started out at 10% and then went up another 35%, and then it was 80%, and then it was 104%, and now it's rounded out at either 120%, 125%. Now, what that means, of course, is basically the cost of goods that we bring in from China will double in price, maybe more than double in price. Which forces, what's that do? It forces either the Chinese to negotiate the tariff rates, the reciprocal tariff rates down, or it really forces us to buy from other manufacturer things ourselves.
Absolutely.
So that'll be...
And again, it's a long-term goal, but it's going to bring a lot more opportunity here in America and a lot more jobs
Well, there's already a lot of interesting things going on. Do you like seafood, Kelly?
I love it. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. What's some of your favorite seafood?
Well, I'm a sushi girl, so I definitely like sushi the most. And then I like any fish. Any cooked fish is good. What about you?
Well, I like shrimp and I like scallops. I didn't realize this, but like 80% of our shrimp does not come from the United States. I think it comes from, Ecuador, India, places to the south of us. So the United States and the shrimp fishermen folks have suffered greatly. There's a shrimp alliance that, because of the tariffs, they think they will come back alive and really dominate the shrimp seafood market, which, it's amazing how we don't realize how our economy has been so, invaded by foreign tariffs. And we just let things happen. And that's, Trump's like a big wake-up call to all of us on that topic. So anyhow, plenty more to talk about.
Your tummy will be happy if it comes here in town, right? Bring it local. Let's get some fresh shrimp.
That's right. So, we will talk more about tariffs on another show or so. But we do have a special guest today that's going to, not a recurring special guest, but another special guest that you got to hold on, because you're going to learn a lot from this individual.
Swenson Children's Foundation started to encourage hope and support so that children can have faith in their futures. As it says in Psalms 127:3, children are a blessing and a gift from our Lord. We see God's hand in every outreach opportunity we have had over these last 10 years to provide a blessing to children and their families in need, and will continue to serve our communities from coast to coast. If you would like to learn more about our foundation, please visit our website, Swenson Children's Foundation.
Are you looking for a local, top-tier accounting and consulting firm? Look no further than Swenson Advisors. Since 1998, Swenson Advisors has been delivering personalized, customer-focused services with the expertise of a national firm. Our clients, from middle-market public and private companies to high-net-worth individuals, trust us for our responsive, ethical, and innovative approach. Whether you're in technology, real estate, manufacturing, or the nonprofit sector, Swenson Advisors has you covered. Specializing in lease accounting, audit and assurance, tax services, and consulting, Swenson Advisors delivers tailored solutions for your financial success. We're not just another accounting firm. We're your strategic ally, dedicated to innovative solutions and impeccable service. Ranked among the top 25 accounting firms by the San Diego Business Journal and recognized for our integrity and responsiveness, join the countless clients who trust Swenson Advisors for their accounting needs. Visit us at swensonadvisors.com today or call us at 619-237-3400. Swenson Advisors, expertise you can trust, solutions you can count on.
So welcome back. As you know, we spend quite a bit of time on these shows talking with and getting to better understand candidates and current political figures in Southern California, as well as places around the – we've interviewed state senators in South Dakota and whatnot. So it's really designed to help educate the public that listens to this about how to make wise decisions in terms of supporting and electing figures. So today we have a special guest that is currently on the San Marcos City Council. And Ed, are you with us today?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
Great. Ed Musgrove is currently a San Marcos City Council. We've had the mayor of San Marcos, Kelly, one of your friends, on the air before. And so, Ed, why don't you kind of share a little bit about your background and some of the positions you hold, and then we'll talk about it, kind of your guiding principles and, in particular, your political future.
Sure. Thank you for that opportunity. So I am actually a California native. I was born in Sacramento, and our family relocated to San Diego County when I was three. Lived in the South Bay for a while, then moved a little further north. We lived in Poway, went to Poway High School, left there to join the Army, where I spent 7 years, and came back to San Diego to join the Sheriff's Department, where I had a fantastic career, just short of 26 years. And since then, and in fact, during that time, I became more involved in some of our nonprofits and working with my city in San Marcos on commissions and committees. And when the opportunity presented itself through districting to run for city council, it was an open seat. There was no council member in that area. I ran first time in 2020, had everything all mapped out, planned out, was going to be a big to-do, and then we had to shut down for COVID. So everything gets kind of put on the back burner, and you have to look and see what really can we do. So through some creative groundwork, we managed to pull that off against my opponent, winning by 15 points.
Wow.
And I was just reelected last November by 30 points.
Well, it sounds like they must like you.
I hope so, because that's always been my issue is I run for four. At the end of that four, if your evaluation is that you've done a great job or at least a good job, then we'll send you back because it's their opinion to me that matters.
So what is the current profile of the city council in San Marcos? I have a daughter and my grandchildren live within the city limits of San Marcos, and certainly an impressive area. But give us a little bit of a profile of the city council and its leanings these days.
Yeah, so we actually have four Republicans on the council and one registered NPP, no party preference. But the city overall is a D9, so it's the proportion between Republican and Democrats. The Democrats have a 9% advantage. But the council members, the four Republican council members focus, and this includes the mayor, Mayor Jones, we focus on the issues that matter most to our residents, you know, business climate, working on infrastructure, creating a prosperous city for them, a place where they want to live. And we have, you know, like everyone else, we have issues with available housing. So when something does come up with a build, we have waiting lists for people to get in. We have a fantastic university, Cal State San Marcos, that is ever growing. We have one of our local developers is building right now some dorms for low to moderate income students that might otherwise not be eligible or financially able to attend the university that will have somewhere to stay. So we do a lot to, you know, engender support for the school, to work with our business community, and to make it a great place to live. That is our focus.
Yeah, and it is. And my youngest daughter graduated many years ago from Cal State San Marcos when it was considerably smaller. In fact, I remind her from time to time that it was a fairly undeveloped school at the time, that they had bobcats and mountain lions running around in the parking lot. And I would drive up there at night, she lived in our home, and picked her up and took her from her classroom to her car. she didn't encounter. But I don't think a bobcat or mountain lion could exist in the phenomenal growth of that school.
Maybe not on the campus proper, but there are still a lot of undeveloped land surrounding the university.
Yeah.
We, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. When I came back from the Army, that was still the legacy land for the Prohorov Chicken Ranch. San Diego State had a storefront campus along our furniture row where a lot of the furniture stores are. And they were still in that process of deciding, do we open a full campus or do we just initiate the process for a brand new CSU? And very fortunately, they did. And we were able to secure that property, and it has just been a godsend for us in a lot of different ways.
Well, maybe some of those animals remember the chicken days. So we actually, my wife and I, raised chickens, but only a handful of them. In fact, a couple have died lately, but the grandkids really enjoy it. But I had a carpenter from East County. He was the one that always put up our Christmas lights. And I mentioned to him that I have a couple of, from the grandkids, a couple of chickens that we got at Easter. And my wife wasn't real happy about that. But so I called Dave out and said, You know, can you help assemble one of these Tractor Supply chicken? He says, I'm a third generation chicken farmer. You don't want that. Let me build. And this guy built a phenomenal chicken coop. It's on wheels. It's got all the ventilation. You know, short of a grizzly bear, nothing's getting in there. And we've never had, even though the neighbors have had problems with, you know, some of the wildlife, these chickens have been, and my wife's taking great care of them. They get, they produce great eggs, number one, but secondly, they get treated with five-star service. And some of the stuff they eat is amazing.
Well, Steve, I think you bring up something that's really positive here in our community, and that is that a lot of people are taking the time to have their own homesteads and raise their own chickens and maybe have goats for goat milk and cows. And so there is a very diverse sense here in San Diego that I think a lot of people outside of California don't understand. And I wanted to ask you, Ed, because I know that you worked in public service, you said, for 25 plus years in the sheriff's department. What are some things that you were able to see, and what really encouraged you to get involved when you were done there with all of these nonprofits, you know, San Marcos City Council? I know you're a chair of Standag. What are some of the things that you have seen over those 25 plus years that really encouraged you? Hey, we got to make a change. We got to make a difference. I've seen enough to know I have the education, the background. I'm going to jump in. Kind of what was that process like for you?
When I retired, I had an opportunity to work at a nonprofit trade school in Carlsbad, one of our neighboring cities. But it was very sensitive to economic trends. So when we knew that there was going to be some downtrends, I was offered a job to work at the Metropolitan Transit System. So I went down there and I spent the better part of 3 years working as the deputy director of security. And that was kind of an eye-opener. North County has always had their issues with crime and homelessness. So we just have to be honest with each other. It's everywhere. Yeah. But because of the nature of a public transit agency, it was almost to the point where it was uncomfortable to go to any one of our platforms. Plus we had Father Joe's Village was a block away, but it didn't turn me off. What it did was it caused me to go out and talk to these people and find out exactly what their situation was. And so it's easy to walk right past them and say, why are they blocking the sidewalk? But when you talk to them, there are any number of reasons why they may be in that position. And at MTS, we worked to reunite families. We got them working with the San Diego Police Department primarily, because that's where most of the platforms are, to get them health services they needed. If they needed to go to detox, get them going, try and get them steered in the right direction. And you're not going to fix the problems overnight, and you're not going to be able to fix all of them, but you don't stop trying. So when I left there, I was already working on a couple of nonprofit boards and coming back to San Marcos specifically. So I gave up that position, the paid position, to come to San Marcos, working with some of our electeds and volunteering for first the Traffic Commission and the Planning Commission, really getting to see the full picture of how all of this comes together and forms the community. And the best form of government is one where people don't have to pay attention. And right now in California, there's just too much focus on a lot of the negativity that comes out of Sacramento. So my goal would be to bring some of the positives back to that by bringing back local control. And, you know, Sacramento can offer the guidelines of what they want, what they see as a vision, but nobody knows best for their community than the community itself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And those who they've elected in order to make, you know, I'm in Fallbrook, so I'm on the Fallbrook Planning Group, and we make suggestions to the county. And unfortunately, that's all we can do. We work really hard with the county to try to get the needs of our community met. But like you said, because of Sacramento, our hands are tied in a lot of ways. And that's one of the things I'm always trying to promote is get out there and vote, pay attention. Like you said, there's a lot of negativity, but we can turn that around. And I think, you know, you're running for state Senate, District 40. I know that you're going to be up there trying to have common sense work for, you know, we the little people down here in our local communities to have more control. What are some of the ways you think you can go about that as a senator in Sacramento to promote more local control?
Great question, Kelly. And I think the best way to do that is to not go to Sacramento and beat your fists on the table and make demands, especially when you're in a super minority. You have to find that common ground. I really believe that all of us want the same thing, and that's a better state, a more hospitable one for our business community. We want to drive down the cost of living, make housing a lot more affordable. We can't get wrapped up too much with the goal of being reelected. As I said before, you run for two or you run for four, and then it's not your opinion of yourself that matters. It's how effective have you been for the people you represent. So finding the common ground across the aisle and say, this is a plan we can all benefit from because our communities will benefit. So if you're willing to break away and speak common sense, then let's get this done. Otherwise, you know, it is working, but it's a slower process to start flipping some of these seats where you then force the discussion because you no longer have a supermajority that you can simply discount one side because you don't need them on the votes. And that is not fair representation for anyone. Even if your proclivity is to the majority, you're not getting the whole picture, and we need to have that. That needs to be part of our local and state governance.
You're listening today to Ed Musgrove, who is a member of the San Marcos City Council and is chairman of SANDAG. Talk to us, Ed, a little bit about SANDAG. It has certainly had its visibility in the San Diego area in terms of all kinds of challenging ideas and mileage taxes and stuff, but as well as turnover in the leadership. You must be a pretty popular guy to be voted chairman.
Well, so, Steve, I'll just tell you, I'll qualify it. I am the chair of one of the committees. The chair is Mayor Lisa Huebner from Solana Beach.
Oh, okay.
So before the last election cycle, I was either, and still am, the deputy, or rather, excuse me, alternate for Mayor Jones as the chair. So she's on the board as representing San Marcos. I'm her alternate. So if she can't make it or we need to go there to discuss issues and concerns, we'll do that. But I was also on the Transportation Committee, Planning Committee, Audit Committee, and Public Safety. So every 2 years, generally, the cities will look at who has what council members have what assignments, and they'll move them around because everybody needs a good cross-section of experience and you need fresh ideas. The downside is you lose a little bit of the institutional knowledge, but we rely on each other to educate and bring everyone back, and staff does a great job of that.
You so probably work with Melody Burkholder from Carlsbad?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
So in this last cycle, my name was put up to chair the Public Safety Committee, and I was already on there as a member, and the mayor of Solana Beach, Lisa Huebner, is a Democrat, but she's well aware of my comments I've made at the board, the comments I've made at the committees. So we sat down and she says, look, I'd like to put you on there as the chair, but I don't want to be a political forum. And I looked at her and I said, Lisa, I said, there's nothing political about public safety. It's something we all want. We all want the same goals. Politics does not enter into this. It's what's good for our community. So she agreed. Oh. And oh, I am the chair of the Public Safety Committee, which they're cops, firemen, but there are other concerned entities that are part of this committee.
Well, that's great because we need that kind of leadership.
Absolutely. And I love that you guys came together and she saw that you have that background where you can come together. And even though you may disagree on some of your politics, like you said, that's where we need to find that middle ground. And that's that we all want the crime, the homelessness to go down. We all want to have better pocketbooks, let's be honest. And we want our cities to thrive. So, you know, that speaks volumes that you're able to go in and negotiate even with people across the aisle and say, hey, let's focus on these challenges. Let's have goals and let's work together, even though we disagree on maybe 20%, but let's agree on this 80%. And it's a big 80%. What are some of the things that you're seeing as far as crime and homelessness here? Like what has Sacramento tried to provide in order to bring it down and been unsuccessful?
There just seems to be this concerted effort to put money to solve an issue. And that part of that is also a concept of housing first. Now, I totally agree that we need to get people off the street. It's not a safe environment for them. But warehousing people is not the answer. Mm-hmm. Temporary housing is fantastic. Get them off the street. But you really need to address the root causes. And in my experiences, they generally come from one of four areas, either drug issues, mental health, economic, or familial. there are people that simply just do not want to be part of what we would call the mainstream of society. But in our experiences, both down at MTS and currently in San Marcos, where our sheriff's deputies partner up with clinicians to go out and talk to these people, we have been able to reunite them with families, get them services they need. And that really is at the root of this. And it is not a problem or an issue that will be solved overnight and will probably never be solved completely. But again, it doesn't mean you stop trying. You will always have an audience there that cries for help. And we just, as a society, we tend to walk past them because we don't want to look at them. So when Sacramento pushes money down, and then some of the electeds in some of our cities say, well, we're going to buy this building or rent this building and we can stick, 1,000 homeless people in there and that'll solve an issue. You're treating them like a commodity. You're warehousing people. And that is simply not the right answer. You're not going to the root cause. Get them out of the rain. Get them out of the oppressive heat. But it needs to be a multi-pronged approach. Now start figuring out what we can do to make it better for them.
We're listening today to Ed Musgrove, who is running for state senate in the District 40. So on that topic, let's drop back a little bit and talk about numbers in Sacramento. How many Republican state senators are there today?
We have 11 right now. So out of 40, there's still a supermajority. It's the Republicans, they actually get probably a bigger bite of different committees because there are so few, but if your voice is not being heard, that's a problem. And we have a fantastic minority leader. He's the current leader, senator from District 40, and that's Brian Jones. He's done a lot to try and bring both sides together, provide positive legislation. But if it doesn't fit a model that the other side wants, sometimes it gets discounted. You have to get it out of committee before you can get it to the floor. They have a process to gut and amend bills, which to me, in my opinion, is a little bit deceitful. Where the money goes, we just need a better understanding of how our dollars are being spent and are they being spent in the right areas.
So Brian is getting termed out, right?
Mm-hmm. Just for background, because we didn't discuss this, I first met him 15 years ago when I promoted to captain on the sheriff's department, and I was interviewed by the city manager and selected to be what they call their chief of police. So I'm the captain in charge of the sheriff's station. And for those who know San Diego, that included Santee, Lakeside, Sequan, Barona, Viejas, all the way out to Descanso, halfway up to Poway. It was a very large area. And Brian was still on the city council. So that's where I first got to meet him. And to be honest, that's really where I kind of got the bug, because I would see the different council members and they worked well together. Don't get me wrong. But when you see their interactions and you see, well, there's one person that is consistently the voice of reason, can take a 100-word argument, distill it down to 10 words and have more meaning, that's what you like. And he has been that person and he continues to be that person.
Yeah, Brian's a good friend of the Save America Now PAC, and we've had him speak at a number of our lunches, and a strong personality. And now what's the competition look like for this district race?
I do have a primary opponent, so our goal is to outraise them. Our networking system is fantastic. We have roots in all the areas. I've lived in three of the four cities. The one city I didn't live in was Santee, but I was a sheriff's captain out there. And part of this district includes a portion of the city of San Diego, and I've lived in the city of San Diego twice. I've lived in Escondido, currently in San Marcos, and raised in Poway. I know the area. I have roots that go back to the 1970s. In these areas. So establishing myself to the community is not a hurdle for me to overcome. It's just getting out there with our team. And you really have to get on the ground and talk to people. Let them know who you are, what you stand for. There's a comfort level that comes into these elections. We don't want complacency. We want motivated voters who understand who the candidates are and why they need to vote for me.
Yeah, and Ed, let's talk about that. What is District 40? What does it cover? Which cities?
Yeah, so the cities are San Marcos, Escondido, Poway, Santee, and then a portion of the city of San Diego, which is primarily Rancho Bernardo, Penasquitos, Mira Mesa, Scripps Ranch, Miramar, and then out towards University City. and then the unincorporated communities north to Fallbrook, and then as you work your way east to Valley Center, all the way out to the Imperial County line with two very small exceptions, and then south effectively till you get to the city of El Cajon. That's in a separate Senate district. So the two areas in the county that are not part of the Senate district are the communities of Borrego and Julian. Because of the districting, they belong to Senator Sayarto, who's primarily in Riverside County. But it's about over 900,000 people.
Wow.
Okay, 900,000. And I know that you said in San Marcos it was a D plus 9%. What does it look like for your district?
It's almost evenly balanced. It can fluctuate with a one percentage point or two. But there's a significant number, almost 30%, are the no party preference. And I see most of those as disaffected party people who just want some common sense governance. And we will appeal across the spectrum. And I'm not going to just campaign with the people that I think will vote for me. My goal has always been to reach out to everyone, because when you're elected, you represent everyone and you owe a duty to the people that may not have been inclined to vote for you or didn't vote for you, but you owe them a service too. I did that on my last election when I won by 30 points. The first thing I did was invite my opponent for coffee, and we spent an hour just talking about the common interests. And when I asked her why she ran, it wasn't to question her ability or motivation. I wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something that she was seeing. So we had a great conversation, great cup of coffee. And I think you owe that to everyone in your community, not just those that you can say they voted for me and that's who I'm going to be speaking to.
Absolutely.
So, Ed, how do we move from 11 to 21?
we have an election coming up in 26. We need to support those candidates in the districts where we can get some leverage. We've had some good movement with the last election cycle, but continuing to do two things: reveal what's going on in Sacramento with the mismanagement of funds and the misguided attempt to control from Sacramento what needs to be controlled, if you will, or decided at the local level, which is extremely important. Give the guidance, give the parameters, and let the local officials decide, because they know best what's for their communities, and continue to reveal that and then support those candidates that want to bring common sense to Sacramento. If we can break up one of the supermajorities in either of the House, that is a great start. The governor's race is going to be interesting to watch. We have some good candidates coming up, so we'll have to see how that pans out. But I think a lot was revealed in the last election cycle about what can be done, and we're seeing it now with the federal government. I know we talked about DOGE, but everywhere I've been, including in the military, government efficiency is a standard. We, no matter how good we get, we can get a little bit better. So always looking at what we're doing and then saying, okay, this is fantastic. Now what can we do? I think that has to be an ongoing process. And right now, we're just not seeing that in Sacramento. And I think the minority Republicans, they have a degree of frustration as anybody would, but we're not going to stop working.
Yeah, especially with the cost of living and what we have to deal with here. Now, I see that you do have a lot of elected officials who have supported you, endorsed you. How has your support been for election in District 40 so far? And how long have you been? When did you announce?
We announced about the middle of January and started actively campaigning closer to February. And we've had some significant gains, both financially, with the support from a lot of elected officials, our business community, our community outreach. The motivation is there. And I definitely see people want change, but they want positive change. They don't want just something that's different than what's there today, because we don't know that that's going to be any better. And I present that positive change.
Ed, tell us, there's a lot of conservative Christians listen to this radio station. Tell us a little bit about your faith.
So I am currently a Presbyterian, but I'll give you my background. My grandfather, so my paternal grandfather, was a Pentecostal minister. He had his own church in San Diego. It was the Apostolic Christian Missions. We used to go across the border when I was a little boy to bring supplies and blankets and everything else we could to some of the impoverished down in Tijuana. We had a lot of church services. As you get older, you move around, especially with the Army. So the Army will move you from one place to another, always with faith-based services available. and some of them were non-denominational, but they generally provided what you might want, whether it was a Catholic, Presbyterian, Jewish. So that wasn't a big issue. But as when I got married, my wife did not come from a religious background. So, you know, you have to ease people kind of into it. So we started off at a Methodist church and ended up with a Presbyterian church.
Yeah, I started off as Methodist, ended up going through a Baptist church, now an evangelical independent church. But I spent some time with the Orthodox Presbyterian Church in New York with a good friend of ours who is also a regular interviewee. Awesome. So it's, you know, the thing that we believe is important is that in many ways the battles we have today are not Republican, Democrat, but spiritual battles. You know, abortion is a spiritual issue. Transgender surgery is a spiritual issue. You know, the borders, and, you know, I'm sure as a law enforcement person, you look at what is going on with the open borders and the crime, and it's just so unbelievable and shocking every day to see the families and people injured, murdered, raped, whatever, by just, you know, throwing open the door on the southern border and having a president and vice president and director of Homeland Security who could have cared less about the lives of Americans. And it just, you know, it obviously was critical to having a change in Washington. But, you know, as an auditor, you know, I always find peeling back the onion, Kelly and Ed, as a fascinating. And, you know, we've seen about the first 100 days or so, and the deportations and the crime and everything. It's just, and there's still more to, I'm sure, still more to see, but it's just so disappointing when you think about, and my wife would ask about this, how does this happen? I said, well, quite frankly, the enemy is within us. You know, the infiltration in the universities, the infiltration in government, to have some of the Marxist, socialist, left-wing people leading this country is just so shocking and disappointing. And thankfully, you know, Trump won, you know, certainly a good majority in the Electoral College. But I have to tell you, from a vote standpoint, we still had tens of millions of people who thought Kamala Harris was just fine. And, you know, it's just disturbing that it underscores the fact that, you know, we really need to work hard to continue to change hearts and minds. I think a lot of that's going to be through the churches. It's going to be supporting folks like you, Ed. It's going to be, you know, our movement to turn California red is not inconsequential. I had coffee with Corin Rankin, the new California GOP chairperson, the other day. I just challenged her. I said, you know, 52 electoral votes swinging to the Republican, you know, vote in 2028 would be a huge safe harbor for this country to keep from falling back into the evil anti-American Marxism that is still not an insignificant percentage of our people.
You know, Steve, you hit on a very valid point when we were talking about the border issue. And so we're talking about President Biden and then Vice President Harris and her efforts. They exemplify the rule of man and not the rule of law. When we go to the rule of man, it becomes anarchy. That's why we have laws. We have a constitution. We have state laws. And with the president enforcing the laws that exist, I don't know why that has to be such a foreign concept or an issue for demonstration. These are our laws. They're well established, and we have used them in years gone by. And when we veered too far away from that, it became too comfortable, and we got complacent, and we didn't care. And when the president said, nope, we're going back to enforcing the laws we have, then those who choose not to abide by the laws become demonstrators. And that's just not, I mean, it's a free country. You're free to demonstrate as you like. Don't destroy somebody else's property. But have your voice heard. We're fine with that, but we're still going to enforce the laws we have.
Well, I think it's critical that we take a very hard look at the universities both the administration and many of the faculty are so steeped in Marxism. Of course, Karl Marx was a total disaster, and why in the world they would follow that model is stupid. But on top of that, you know, Trump is really exercising his financial leverage, and you know they're pulling. I saw a chart the other day about 20 universities where they're pulling Kelly hundreds of millions of dollars, in one case $1 billion out of the school budgets in some of these universities, including those some of them in California here that basically are saying, okay, if you're going to promote anti-American messages on campus and with your faculty, you're not going to use American dollars to do that. You can take it out of your endowment fund. You can erode that or whatever. But you know, I'm the chairman of a small Christian college here, and one of the things that I talk with the president about is the fact that you know something unique in Southern California is a true Christian biblical worldview university. And something that has appeal, particularly to parents who, you know, we have 30-some Christian schools in San Diego County. There's Tri-City, I think, is in your district there.
It's actually just outside. It's in the city of Vista and Oceanside. It's just outside the district.
Yeah, and you probably have parents that send their kids there. We have a number from our church in Carlsbad that are there and also on the faculty. But, you know, you can spend a lot of time and money educating these kids in a biblical worldview Christian environment and send them off to some of these schools, and within they come back the first semester hating you and hating God and right. Thinking we're a bunch of idiots. And it's been a vicious battle at the university level, and I'm really just like the economy's getting pretty shook up with the tariff strategy, which I think is ultimately going to work out, but you know it takes some very dramatic motions and movements and decisions. I think some of the more humorous things are we're shipping all these criminals out, Ed, and we have a judge that thinks you ought to ship them back, and you know, fortunately, the Supreme Court, even though it was a 5-4 vote, which is shocking. Said no, he has the power to get rid of all these gangsters and how these people. I mean, it's obvious they just walked in. They were either part of the gotaways or walked right over the border, and they got their food and clothes and airplane ticket and stayed in the 4-star hotels.
Mm-hmm. They got a cell phone with an app to come back in 5 years for their hearing.
Yeah. I mean, just the word insanity. To some extent, Kelly, if we were having this discussion 10 years ago, you'd throw us off the air because of some insanity claim that you have no idea. Your imagination has gone crazy, but it's hard to believe that we have to even discuss these issues these days.
And I do wonder if that just has to do with them hating Trump and not necessarily thinking that, you know, what's happening is wrong, but just wanting to do everything to go against him. And that actually brings me back to Doge. You know, a lot of people, why would you be in an uproar that we are now trying to use our tax dollars for things that are actually beneficial for the American people? And people are up in, they're in uproar about it. So I'm curious, have you talked to Brian Jones about kind of what is the feeling in Sacramento? Maybe don't use the word Doge because the left may hate that word, but, you know, we say it, Doge in California. Do you feel that they are open to balancing the checkbook and taking a look at where the funds are going here in California?
Well, it was just a couple of weeks ago that Governor Newsom claimed that he started Doge. I don't know how we could do the research on it. I think there's a real concern from the majority party that they have not been good stewards of the public funds, money that's been put towards different programs. I mean, the one that sticks out in everybody's mind is the train, the one out in the desert that is never going to see a passenger. But money that comes for homelessness, the layering we put on to the builders for housing. We claim we need more housing, So let's do that by putting, you know, rules and laws and processes in place that hinder that building. And then that drives up the cost because we don't have the available stock. The interest rates go up. There's just a real disconnect with what's going on right now between what we think we need to do, how we're spending the money, and then are we really tracking it and putting it towards a good effort? So we've had that discussion with the senator. And again, DOGE is not a foreign concept for us. We should be doing that all the time. That is part of, like Steve said, that is part of an ongoing audit process. I've been through internal audits when I was with Metropolitan Transit System, and I had the federal government come out when I managed the sheriff's Homeland Security grant, multi-million dollar grants, have the federal government come down and do an audit of our programs. Are we meeting the guidelines and conditions and getting passed with flying colors? Because you have a duty and a responsibility to the public. When you have public funds, there is a trust that's involved with that. And I'm a firm believer in that.
Absolutely. So and that comes down to the local level as well.
Ed, you don't feel like voting for another $7 billion for the high-speed rail, which is the latest number they want in the next 18 months?
I think it's disingenuous to provide a low number that you know is not accurate, then increase that number, vilify the federal government, and then go hat in hand asking for more money.
Yeah.
I think that's a horrible position to take. And I get, at one point, the governor even admitted, well, it's really more a jobs program. Okay, that is a true reckoning because that's what it's become. There's no rail that's been laid down yet. They haven't even talked about when it's completed, who's going to buy the trains, how are we going to fund them, and if we're going to clean energy, are these, I don't see any Canton areas, where are the electric lines and where's the grid to support that? These are going to be diesel or they're going to be electric, but how is that going to be fueled? There's just a lot of disconnects. It just doesn't make any sense to me, and we need to bring common sense back to Sacramento so that we're working towards the public good and in the interest of our residents.
Well, Ed, this has been very enlightening, and unfortunately, we're out of time. But tell us before we leave, if somebody wanted to support your campaign for state Senate, how do they do that?
Certainly. They can go right to the website. It's Musgrove, the number 4, Senate.com.
Okay. And I'm sure you can donate. And it has the rules and regulations for that. So, well, this has been great, Ed, and we look forward to staying in touch with you and probably having you on for another program. And we wish you the best on this, and thank you for sharing your wisdom today.
Yeah, thank you, and best of luck.
Yep, I look forward to continuing the conversation.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Well, Steve, it was another good show. I'm excited for the next one.
Yes, they're always, I get a little better all the time. That's
a
great
lot
guy.
Each time. Yep. Absolutely.
All right.
Please support him. See you next time.
Yep.